Thank you. I'd like to thank the organizers, and I'm very honored to be able to speak here. So unfortunately, there's quite a lot of overlap between the previous talk and this talk. And I'll try to sort of, the point of view is a little bit different, so that's kind of complementary in a sense. I mean, you'll see when we get there, but and there are some other results that are not actually on surfaces, so that will be completely different, but a lot of it is actually sort of talking about the same kinds of objects, so please bear with me. So so I'll be speaking about very special cases of Bode's conjecture, and I mean, as was sort of discussed in the panel discussion yesterday, if you were there, I think it's very safe to say that it's a very powerful conjecture, and it's also very inspiring, but it's often very difficult. So, but there are sort of some cases when you can do sort of explicit computation of heights and get maybe not the full conjecture, but at least some direction toward it on some variety. So that's sort of what I will be discussing. All right, so let me first recall what the conjecture is. So you got, so in the last talk, there was a little bit of discussion about the case when you can conclude that the integral points are not Zariski dense, but there's actually a little bit stronger version, and that's the one that I'll be looking at. Okay, so let me start by sort of some conventions. So for K is a number field, and MK is the set of equivalence classes of places. And so my convention, which may or may not be standard, but it's just helpful for notational purposes, is to, so the single vertical line is the normalized absolute value on Q that's extended to K, and then when I use this double vertical thing, this would be the single vertical thing, single absolute value taken to the local degree using K script divided by the total degree. So this is made so that you have a product formula with the double things, and there will be no sort of constants in front in the Bode's conjecture. So that'll be the convention. So I guess just up a little bit so people can see. So I'll be using this one to. And another notation is v of x will be the additive version of this. So it's minus log of. And then one can define using this double vertical absolute value. So use this to define a metric on the line bundle that corresponds to a Cartier divisor. And from here, you can define a local height function or wave function to be. So my notation for that is lambda sub d pv, and that's defined to be minus log of s sub d of pv, where this s sub d is a canonical meromorphic section. And the point of defining it with this particular power over here is that from here you can conclude that the sum of local heights is equal to the global height. Plus 01 as long as the p is not on the divisor. So it's the sum over all the places. All right. So there's no constants in front, so that's just. All right, so with this, I think now I want to state Bode's conjecture now. So okay, so X is a smooth. So it'll be a little bit different notation from the last lecture. So I'm using a non-tilde version to be already compact. So smooth projective. Phi D over a number field K. D is a normal crossings divisor, which doesn't really have to be defined over K. If you assume that the Voigt conjecture actually holds for all number fields, it doesn't really matter because you can just extend to wherever this is defined, and then over that field, the Voigt conjecture, if Voigt conjecture over that big field is true, then this one would follow also. So it doesn't really matter where this is defined as long as it's inside K bar. And K is a canonical divisor, and A is an ample divisor. Okay, the statement is, so that's the inputs. So the statement is that the given epsilon greater than zero, there exists a Zariski closed Z, which depends on epsilon, and it's also not equal to the whole thing. Such that the following height inequality holds. Such that, forgot to say S in MK is a finite set, a finite set of places. So I have a sum over those finite set of the local guys, so lambda, D, P, V, and then plus the height of a canonical divisor. And that's supposed to be less than epsilon times the height of an ample, and then there's an adjustment by a bounded function necessary. So this actually holds for all p in with a rational point on k, but you subtract this exception, which is z, I guess. I guess I forgot to say that, I mean, just from looking at this definition of local height over here, I guess I can put it up still there. I mean, that canonical meromorphic section SD is equal to zero right on D. So if you evaluate minus log of that, it's infinity. And from that, I mean, the local height is always going to be very big if the point P is viadically close to the divisor D. So what this conjecture is really saying is that the sum of local height is really information about how close you can let P to be close to D in the viadic sense, and sort of how much you can get close to is controlled by sort of the negative part of the canonical divisor. That's sort of one way to interpret Voigt's conjecture, and in that sense, this is very much related to Diophantine approximation. Yeah. The normal crossing divisor? Which does, I guess. Yeah. Okay. So, just to demonstrate exactly how powerful this is, I think most of you know this particular thing, but this also ties in with the theme of the semester at the Fields Institute. So if you assume that X is of general type, then this canonical divisor K is going to be almost ample. And if you take D to be equal to just zero, so I guess it's effective plus, you're allowed to take D to be zero, but not anything negative, I guess. you get the information that height with respect to an ample divisor is basically bounded. So it's either, so then X, P in XK has either bounded height, or it belongs to this exception, or it belongs to the to Z. So in other words, you can conclude that the rational points are not the risky dense. Okay. So, I mean, this is related to all kinds of propositions and conjectures about hyperbolic geometry, and this is also why I guess some people believe that this is a little bit too strong of a thing to expect, but at least let's just sort of put that aside for now and actually see what we can conclude about this conjecture. Alright. So I should mention some known cases. Okay, so this is either Ziegler's theorem or Folting's theorem on Model's conjecture. So this is Model. And this is also proved by sort of with an inspiration from Niven limit theory, which is what this is an analog of, but it proved this statement using sort of inspiration from Niven limit theory. Okay, so that's one case that's known, and another case that's known is Pn, and you take D to be union of hyperplanes. Of course, I mean, D has to be in normal crossings, but you take D to be a union of hyperplanes. It's all of degree one. This is a result, this is basically modulo some combinatorial argument. This is essentially equivalent to Schmidt subspace theorem. All right, and then I want to mention last one is the abelian variety, and this is another one of Folting's work. All right. Pardon? Yeah, for Pn, everything up to n plus 1 is going to be trivial because you have this canonical divisor which is minus n plus 1. So you need n plus 2 at least here. And I mean, the reason why I said the combinatorial argument is that Schmidt subspace theorem, at least in the original like statement, it's actually n linear forms with n variables. But you can sort of use that theorem and convert it into this form by a combinatorial argument. Right? Okay, so I want to sort of, so there are several other cases where this conjecture is known, some of which will appear a little bit later in this talk. But as you can see, there are all kind of big theorems and usually very difficult to prove. So I want to switch gears a little bit now and talk about blow-ups. And if you subscribe to the philosophy that geometry is supposed to control the arithmetic, I mean, a blow-up is a birational process, so the geometry is supposed to be, I mean, you can say it's fairly close to each other, so maybe you can expect Voigt's conjecture to be sort of close. And that actually turns out to be the case, and this was already observed by Voigt in his lecture notes. So I guess proposition. If you have so y inside x to be non-singular, and so this is the one that I want to blow up along. So for dimension at least 2, and if you have divisor d which is normal crossings and meets this y transversely. Then, and I wanted to note, so x tilde is going to be the blow up of x along y. And I wanted to note by pi to be the map. Okay, then the strict transform d tilde plus e is the exceptional divisor. Is also normal crossings in this case on x tilde, and so let me just write VC from now on for Voigt's conjecture. So on sort of x tilde with divisor d tilde e is stronger. So this is bad. Yeah, then voidless conjecture on the blow up is stronger than the voidless conjecture downstairs. So but it's not really by much, because if you actually write it all out, it'll be different by height of with respect to an exceptional divisor. And because the exceptional divisor doesn't really move, the height is supposed to be fairly small compared to other terms. But that doesn't mean that proving voidless conjecture on the blow-up is automatic once you have it on the base. And in fact, I mean, so we have it on abelian varieties, and if you, we have voidless conjecture already proved for abelian varieties. If you do a blow-up of the product of the same elliptic curve, E cross E, that is actually known, and so that's another one that's actually known. So McKinnon has proved blow-up, so voidless conjecture on the blow-up of E cross E, but with the restriction that the rank of E has to be equal to 1, and his argument does not work if E has rank greater than 1. So it is supposed to be a marginal improvement. If the voidless conjecture on the blow-up is supposed to be a marginal improvement, but that doesn't mean that it's an automatic statement that you can just get. All right. So, okay. So now I'm going to talk about, so this, from now for a little bit, there's going to be a lot of overlap between the previous talk, but it's a little bit from a different perspective. So, all right. So as I said over there, the Schmidt subspace theorem implies, for example, you can apply it with P2 and any kind of normal crossing line. So, union of lines. And also using Schmidt subspace theorem, so this was not specifically mentioned in the previous talk by Kovaya, but so there's a result by Kovaya and Zanier on basically this theorem is the driving force for most of what he talked about. So on greatest common divisors of polynomials of F units. And this, if you sort of write down what this actually is, I'll talk about this more specifically later, this is really voidless conjecture on blow-up of P2, but not the full voidless conjecture for all of rational points, but only evaluated at the integral point. All right, so both of them use Schmidt subspace theorem. The first one is basically almost directly, and this one is actually a non-trivial consequence. But it's not that you can directly go from voidless conjecture here to voidless conjecture here. So, I mean, at least I haven't seen any proof that actually does this. So, I mean, Schmidt subspace theorem is the machinery behind both of them, but you can't go directly from one to the other. So, sort of a natural question to ask is what happens if you sort of keep on doing more and more blow-ups, and whether that actually follows from, say, Schmidt subspace theorem, or maybe from here. And also, there's a little bit of a difference that this one is actually true for all rational points. This one you have to actually only know for integral points so far. So if you do further blow-ups, if there's any kind of more restrictions that are actually necessary. So those are sort of natural questions. And so that's sort of the point of view that I want to look at this. So I'm not really trying to get various conditions under which the point is very risky non-dense. That would be sort of not interesting from the point of view of looking at this inequality, because you can put all the non-dense points into here. So I want to actually get enough points so that that inequality actually said something. So my notion of integral points is a little bit different, and it's a little bit weird, but basically the upshot is that so for 2 and higher, so for all blowups, so for on multiple blowups of PQ, and basically a divisor that comes from a triangle, like this, Bode's conjecture holds for integral points. And I'll make the definition just a little bit later. And this actually is a consequence of result of Kovai and Zanye. So you don't actually have to go all the way back to Schmidt subspace theorem to prove this. So Kovai and Zanye is used, but not Schmidt directly. Okay, and sort of another non-mathematical way of writing it, version 2, would be, so because this we have this proposition that doing a blow-up actually increases the statement of Bode's conjecture, I mean, once you have this statement, you can actually conclude a similar thing for all rational surfaces. So. Of course, with respect to the same kind of divisor and with respect to this quotation mark integral points, whatever that is. All right, so let me actually now define. So let me actually write a precise version of this statement. Okay, so I guess it's actually worked out. So I can actually erase this, and I have these two boards. All right. Okay. So a more precise version. So I'm interested in doing multiple blowups. So let me write x superscript 0 to be P2. And xi would be blow up of xi minus 1 at a point. And ei inside xi would be the exceptional divisor. It just deals with there's a lot of notation, unfortunately. So I really want to do Bode's conjecture on xn. So I want actually divisors on here, so I just keep on taking strict transforms of various exceptional divisors that we have. So E, I, I, is, so that's where we start, and then we get I plus 1, that would be the strict transform of this guy to X, I plus 1, and we do it all the way up to I, N, so those are strict transforms. So EI sits inside XI, and there's a map to from XI plus 1 to XI. So I'm just taking a strict transform of this guy to I plus 1. I want divisors on XN, because that's where Bode's conjecture is going to be. So I just want strict transform all the way up to XI. All right. I take, maybe L is actually a not such a great notation, but so this to be kind of a triangle shape, so three union of normal crossings lines, P2. And this, again, I mean, as I said, this doesn't really have to be over the same number field. So maybe defined over k-bar. And then I denote, this is the, again, you do a series of straight transforms to xn. Okay, so those are the divisors, and I wanted, the divisor that I want to look at is the string transform of L tilde plus maybe one copy each at most of EIN. And this goes from 1 to n. So chi I is 0 or 1. You're not allowed to have more than one because of the normal crossings. All right, so now the definition of integrality that I want to use is the integrality with respect to this lines in here. So I'm not really looking at integral points with respect to D on X, but I'm looking at integral points sort of downstairs. So I be the integral points of P2 minus L, OK, F. All right, and just to make it like really precise, so B is the base locus of this map. So if you take images of EI to downstairs, we have a map from X to P2, which is going to be isomorphism over P2 minus B. So then the statement is kind of running out of room, but I want to kind of finish it here. So then, so Voigt's conjecture holds with respect to these guys. So what that means is that given epsilon greater than 0, so there exists Z, again, as before, Thirsky closed, that's not the whole thing, such that so lambda D of P, D plus height of the canonical is less than epsilon HA P plus O of 1. So for P in I, so I'm only looking at the integral points, and then subtract the Zariski. Zariski closed non-dense set, which is going to be the exception. Right, so it is a form of integrality, but I'm really looking at integral points downstairs, just so that, I mean, making a Voigt's conjecture statement for points that are not Zariski dense is completely vacuous. So I just want enough points, but sort of the points where you can actually say something about. So in that sense, it's a little bit different perspective from the last talk, because the last talk was talking about integral points which are going to be not very ski dense. But I'm looking at sort of this original version of Voigt's conjecture and see what points you can actually say this inequality for. All right. So let me make several remarks. Okay. All right. Yeah, so even for the full version of Voigt's conjecture, there is this exceptional set here. So you could really, so even for rational point version, for the rational point, or the really the full strength of Voigt's conjecture, you can always include these, you know, EIJ space, EINs into this exceptional set Z. So it's really a statement. I mean, this is already a vertex conjecture in this multiple blob case is really a statement about points in P2. I mean, you can at least view it like this if you want. So it is possible to view vertex conjecture as a height inequality on P2. So, I mean, from that point of view, it may not be feel as strange to be looking at integral points downstairs, but, I mean, it is still a little bit of a weird notion, I have to agree. But, as I said, I mean, even for rational versions, it's really a statement about P2. At least you can sort of view it that way, if you like. All right? And, The way I defined I, this is going to be Zariski dense. So it's not a vacuous statement that this inequality holds with exception. So that's the second remark. And so the looking at that picture over there, the P2 case of vertex conjecture does not directly imply the first blob case, but in an essence, I mean, this is really following Kovaya and Zanier's results. So P2, vertex conjecture, maybe I should write it reversed. P2 does not necessarily imply the first blow-up. But we see the vertex conjecture on the first blow-up, getting ahead of myself, does actually imply, well, in most cases, I'll describe this a little bit later, on sort of subsequent blow-ups. So both are blow-up processes, but there is somehow a distinction, and you can write down a proposition that distinguishes these two cases of blow-ups. In other words, I'm not going to actually write down the specifics because it's actually very messy, but you can write down a proposition where it talks about vertex conjecture on a variety. So it describes conditions under which vertex conjecture on a variety implies vertex conjecture on its blow-up. And this is very much integral point kind of statement. So, I mean, this proposition would not be, the hypothesis of this proposition would not be satisfied on this blow-up, but it will be satisfied for these guys. You could actually write down a proposition like this. Okay, but this is very much, I just wanted to say that this is very much integral point argument. So you can't really apply this kind of technique to rational points. Okay, so two more remarks, I think. Okay, so where are we? Four. So the main motivation was really trying to see where I can say something as far as the multiple blow-ups go. But if you apply this result to a particular way of blowing up twice, that would be essentially equivalent to a gap principle. So if you apply certain way of blowing up twice, basically the result is essentially equivalent to a gap principle. Of S unit integers. So what do I mean by that? This holds for all number fields, but let me just write for integers for simplicity, they're rational integers. So if x and y with x bigger and both of them are S F units, so B, yes, Z, F star, but they're also integers. Then the version of gap principle that is equivalent to is a little bit weaker than the best known, but you get a gap principle nonetheless, so you get something like this, with finite exceptions, I guess. So I should say that Tiedemann has a version that's actually stronger. It's x over power of log. So it's not nearly close to the best known result, but you can interpret a statement like this as a statement about gaps between f-unit integers. So you get a completely arithmetic statement out of sort of a geometric situation. And the last remark that I wanted to make before sort of outlining the proof is that you can actually at least attempt to prove, so there are sort of two obvious extensions of this, if you will. I mean, this is a very much integral point statement, so one question would be to ask the same thing about rational points, and that has sort of two parts. First part is actually proving it for the first blow-up, and then there's also the issue of going from the first blow-up to the second blow-up. So those are the two things, and then you can also look at the similar things starting from P3 and see if you can say anything. So I'll describe that maybe in the very, very last part. All right. So the proof of that theorem is actually very straightforward once you write down the statement and sort of organize all the information correctly, sort of in the most convenient way. So okay. So we want to actually look at the sum of heights like this, and we want to bound by epsilon AK. This canonical divisor K is going to have some copies of exceptional divisors. So what we want to do is we want to sort of analyze when the height with respect to various exceptional divisors is small. In that case, small meaning bounded by some factor of epsilon AK. And in that case, we're basically in good shape because it's automatically bounded by this. And if that doesn't happen, then something has to happen in this thing that would not contradict the statement. So that's sort of the strategy. So sum H-E-I-N is going to be smaller than epsilon H-A. And so these are good. Very easy. And then so we need to sort of analyze what kind of blow-up you need to do to get something that doesn't have this property, and then sort of analyze that situation. We need to analyze when so it'll be really proving by working one exceptional divisor at a time. So let me just do some examples. If you are doing the most natural thing to do first is to start from these three lines, and if you blow up, say, this point, that's actually off of the divisors. Oh, so I guess I forgot to say that you can just move the L to XYZ by some PGL map. And everything will be just transferred directly, so you can just assume that the triangle is defined over here. I mean, you may need to actually extend the number field and also the set S, but if you prove it there, then the original statement will be proved also. So you're safe to do this. And if you do that, I just become a set of S-unit coordinate points. So this is X, Y, Z, where all of them is S units. So in particular, this is very ski dense. Okay, so now I'm in this situation, so the three lines are actually the coordinates. And then if I blow up here, then the height of the exceptional divisor in this case is going to be, if this point is, say, A column B column 1, then this will be given by max 0 of V of X minus A and minimum of B of X minus A and B of Y minus B. Okay, I mean, this point is defined by X minus A and Y minus B locally, and if it's close to the exceptional divisor, that means that the absolute value of X minus A and Y minus B are both small, and that's the case exactly we want this height to be very big. So this is what you want to take. Yeah, lambda of E evaluated at X, Y, 1. Yeah, the full notation is like this. Okay. And this result of Clavier-Zanier exactly has a control of a quantity length. So I want to denote this as suggestively as a log GCD plus B of X minus A, Y minus B. Because, I mean, this is minimum of taking valuations, basically, multiplied by some factors of log P, so it makes sense to call it a log GCD. Of course, this is also applicable when V is Archimedean, and in this case, this GCD might be a little bit confusing way of writing it, but this is the quantity, and so maybe I should write it on this way. Oh, this doesn't work, that's right. Okay. Move to the center. Okay. So this is exactly the result of Clavier-Zanier that's actually used behind all the results that was discussed in the previous talk. At least part of it. The argument always goes through something like this. So, theorem of D2 Clavier-Zanier is that, so one way of writing it would be if F and G are non-constant polynomial without common factors, then in two variables, then need a new chalk. The log sum over all places of log GCD plus D of F UV, GUV is less than epsilon times height of UV. For all but, so there is some, again, there's going to be some exceptions also. So for U and V evaluated at S units, as long as I didn't really state this very well, but UV is not in the exception. So I mean, given epsilon, it's exactly in this Voigt conjecture form. Given epsilon, there exists a D such that this statement holds for all S unit coordinates as long as you're off of this exception. So if you use this statement for to the polynomial X minus A and Y minus B, you automatically get that the this guy, so from the height of E is small on pi. All right. Oh, that's right. Keep forgetting. So that's sort of the first observation. And once you do this, then so I forgot to. Ah. So there's a very important condition that one of them has to be non-vanishing at the origin. So f of 0, 0, or g of 0, 0. Otherwise, it's actually not true. So this actually holds if a, b is not the origin. So origin exactly corresponds to this intersection point, which I guess I'll sort of treat it separately. But oh, that's the height of you can view u comma v as a point. Height of u comma v. I mean, you can replace by max of h of u and h of v. I mean, it doesn't really. It's basically it's controlled by the size of u and v. Okay, so the smallness of height occurs as long as you're not blowing up intersections. And once you have a small exceptional divisor, then you're in very much good shape. So if you do a blow up, I should have done that downstairs. So if you do this, so that would be E1 in the notation. And then if you do a further blow up, say, of this point here, then you get something like this. And this will be the strict transform. This will be the new exceptional divisor. Then, so once h of E1 is small on I, then of course the pullback of E1 is the sum of these two things, E1-2 and E2. So both, because of the functoriality with respect to pullback, 1-2 and HE2 are small. So in this sense, the induction actually works through. So on I again. So it's the question of finding the first exceptional divisor that's actually small in the process of blowing up. Okay, and you can, again, make the same argument. If you blow up any point of E12 or E2, you already have an exceptional divisor that has small height. So by pullback, again, you will have a small height. Okay, so maybe I can erase this now. And then so the case of doing blow up of the intersection is actually easier in a way. So if you do a blow up of here, then you get a picture like this. And in that case, when you if you write the canonical divisor here as a minus x minus y minus z, then the canonical divisor here would be minus x tilde, y tilde, minus z tilde, and then you have minus two e's, and then you add one, so you get a minus e. So the canonical divisor is entirely negative. And because this D can contain at most one copy of this exceptional divisor E, the Voigt conjecture is basically vacuous in this case. Okay. And this process continues. I mean, this is basically doing staying inside a toric variety case where a canonical divisor is expressed as a negative of all T divisors. So as long as you're blowing up sort of intersection points of these diagrams, you always have the situation that this statement is going to be vacuous. So the only other base case that's left is going through all these intersection point blow-ups, and then for the first time you do off of the intersection. And then everything else is just sort of keeping track of accounting business, basically. So just okay, so if we do intersection blow up, the height function actually looks something like this. So lambda key p, looks like log GCD plus V of, it has this form. So I think I have it wrong. So x to the e, y to the f, y to the d, x to the c, where c and d, c divided by d is smaller than e divided by f, and these are the Fairy pairs. It doesn't really matter that they're Fairy pairs, but it has this particular shape that it's power of x and y with one of them have x on top, the other one has y on top. So if you do off of the intersection after this, intersection, then now the next height is going to be have log GCD. So it's a really explicit height computation. So x to the e divided by y to the f, so divided by this guy, y to the d, x to the c, minus a, and then y to the d, x to the c. Something of that form. I mean, just working with local coordinates, you get this formula. And the point is that if x and y are S units, so are these guys. So you can apply, the Kovarev-Zanier's result to the polynomial with the first variable this and the second variable this. You need to make an adjustment of epsilon, but you again get, the point is you again get a small height. So that's basically combining everything, and the rest of the proof is just combining all of this information and looking at, for each exceptional divisor, you only look at the blow-ups that are really used in the process of getting to that exceptional divisor, and you analyze based on whether you've been always doing an intersection point blow-up, or if you ever do one off of the intersection, you get already a small height, and the rest of the height is going to be small. So I just want to end by making a higher dimensional and the rational point version of this in a very, very special alignment case. And this is a direct consequence of applying Schmidt subspace theorem. But basically, so Voigt's conjecture in full, so this is for rational points, can be proved for the situation where you actually blow up on exactly at a point which is on exactly one line. So you get this kind of picture. So here you can actually prove it for all rational points, and sort of a more generalized version, the higher dimensional one, can be stated if y is inside Pn. And smooth, and it's inside a linear subvariety of codimension 2. And suppose that H0 through Hn are hyperplanes in general position, such that one of them contains this y. So H0 contains y, but no other. So no other Hi contain y, just like in this situation. I mean, this point is inside one line, but not in the other one. So then Voigt's conjecture holds for rational points. For the blow-up of along y of Pn. And the divisor is the sum of the strict transforms of those hyperplanes and plus E. Okay, so, but this is a very special situation, and going from, say, here and trying to prove the next blow-up, I have been having some difficulty already in actually getting Voigt's conjecture for all rational points. So, and this is sort of a higher dimensional analog that uses the same thing. It's a little bit different from P2 case, but basically in a direct application of Schmidt with some kind of combinatorial argument. Okay, so I won't end here. Thank you.